Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the second day of July 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Veck. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Climbers facility that belongs to the Andersons in Logansport, Indiana. Discuss the weather forecast today with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. By the way, it looks like a great July. Fourth Friday, the rest of the weekend too. We'll hear more about that as we get to the end of our half hour. And along the way today, I'll remind you to tune in on July 4th for a special edition of the Closing Market Report. Markets are closed, but we'll have a discussion about climate change with the chairman of the board of Cargill, Greg Page. That comes up on Friday, but stay with us today for this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. From the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Wednesday afternoon. July contract for the soft red winter wheat, $5.61¾, up 2 cents. The hard red July down 17 at 683. July corn at 418½, down 4¼. September 412¼, 3¾ lower. And December corn futures, or the new crop, $4.18, 4¾ cents lower. The March contract at 429¼, a nickel lower. And July of next year, 443¾, down 4¾. December of 2015, $4.44¾, 4½ cents lower. July soybeans, $13.92½, down 7½. The August at 13¼, 13 cents lower. November beans at $11.41½, down 6. And January at $11.49¾, down 5¾. May futures at $11.65½ in the bean pit, down 4¼. Bean meal futures finished $3.80 lower at $4.52.30. And the bean oil at $38.47, down 40 cents on the day. Live cattle futures in the August at $152.32½, were up 82½ cents. October at $155.67½, up 60. August futures at $216.20, up 42½ cents. September $217.55, up 55. The lean hogs for the day in the July contract, $130.80. They finished down 25 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil for the day, August contract, $104.34 a barrel. That's down a dollar. The RBOB gasoline at $3.02¼, a penny and a half lower. The spread between the two, actually the ethanol at $2.12, up 3¾, and the spread between those two, the RBOB to ethanol at 95¾, that's 5¼ cents narrower than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $4.37, 8¼ cents lower. And diesel fuel for the day at $2.94¾, down 3½ cents. Gold futures finished $1,330.90 a troy ounce, up $4.30. The U.S. dollar at 79.95 finished 0.14 higher on the day. Let's look at the weather forecast as it comes in from the National Weather Service. For the Urbana-Champaign area today, a high of 72 degrees, 70 degrees outside our studios now. Isolated showers, just 20% chance. West winds at 13 miles an hour, though gust to 20. And then this evening, maybe a few more showers, again a 20% chance. Those will come before 1 a.m., mostly cloudy otherwise, in the low of 56. The winds will turn to the northwest at 5 to 9 miles an hour. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny skies and a high of 73 on that north-northwest wind at about 6 miles an hour. Thursday, mostly clear and 53, and northwest wind at 6 miles an hour. That'll become calm after midnight. And for July the 4th, Independence Day, Friday, sunny skies and 78, light and variable winds. Friday night, clear and 58. Saturday, sunny skies and 79. Saturday night, cloudy and 63. And Sunday, partly sunny and 83. You can find all the information about agriculture you would ever want to know about the marketplace on our website. Not all, but a lot of it. If you want to visit there at willag.org, that's willag.org, or follow us on Twitter at Commodity Week.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
It is a Wednesday afternoon, the second day of July 2014. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us is Jackie Vank from Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Let's go through some interesting things. You sent me a note, and I want to look at some things that you have been thinking about and others have been thinking about, and I know producers have been calling lots of folks about that's crop insurance and what kind of revenue protection they might have and how it pays out. You have some numbers for us.
I do. In fact, I was just beginning to work on it, and Kevin Van Trump, who we've had on Commodity Week with us, actually sent me something, so I think it's very good. If you look at an assumption that you have an APH is 180, which would be very common, you know, down here especially and across the belt, with 85% revenue protection, if you produce 170 bushels, you know, lower than your APH, then the crop insurance would pay out at 415. But let's say that you produced 190, 371, 200, 353, 210, we'd have to drop to 336 before you qualify. If you're at an 80% revenue level, those numbers go at 170 or 391 before you get paid. We'll just jump up 190, 350, 332 at 200, and at 210, you're looking at 316 before you get a penny from crop insurance. And the other one is 75%. There it's 366 if you've got 170, 10 bushel below your APH. And if you get 190, you've got 327 for futures, 311 at 200, and 296 at 210. So, you know, one of the things that we've been hearing a lot of people say, Todd, is, well, I'm not worried about the market going down. You know, I mean, let it go down. That's okay. I'll be fine. Crop insurance will take care of me. But I think this could be a very disappointing situation. Granted, they'll have the same dollars per acre as they would have, you know, if they'd have had their APH and the market would have stayed at these levels. But, you know, it's just something I think people have to really, really sit down and think about.
Let me repeat some of these numbers. So most of the people that are listing, and a large part of them, I think about 80% across Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, if I remember the numbers correctly, would have an 85% revenue insurance policy. That, according to the Farm Doc folks and the numbers, I think that come from USDA. So at 85% coverage, which would guarantee $706 an acre, if you raise and you had an APH of 180. And you raised actually 170, payouts would begin at a cash price below $4.15. At 180 bushels, below 319 or 392, 190, $3.71. If you raise 200 bushels, you'd have to have a 353 cash price for things to start to pay out. And at 210 bushels, that probably wouldn't be too hard. I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
At the moment, you'd have to have $3, and you'd have to have a cash price on the average below $3.36. So I think what you're trying to tell us is that there is revenue to protect between now and what the 85% might pay out. Is that right?
That's exactly right. You know, it's I think that. You know, of course, you know, the guys who are in big trouble up in Minnesota and parts of Iowa, I hear them say the same thing all the time. Yay, let the prices go down. It'll help us, you know, in general. But for the guys who have the potential to really produce a lot, who are counting on picking up, granted, some of these people will say to you all the time, these are bonus bushels. So, you know, this is fine. But in the environment that we're in and with the potential that we have in terms of failure on the price side, it's a pretty scary situation. So I don't think you can delude yourself into thinking that you're in a great shape just because you have the crop insurance in place.
Well, the input prices the producers have put into this crop make that these prices, even with a really, really good crop, a break-even maybe make some money at best venture for 2014, I believe.
That's exactly correct. And You know, that's one of the reasons that for a long time already we've been talking about covering 215, you know, 015 using, you know, using put positions. You know, you have guys who say, well, that's crazy. You know, how do we know where, you know, I don't want anybody to cover something or selling cash if we don't know what our input costs are. But I certainly do think there's justification for taking care and protecting yourself. If we do come in, and I talked with some commercials today who truly believe we're going to have above a 14 billion bushel crop unless we have something extremely major happen. That's in spite of how much damage we've had in the Northwest. That's what they're saying. And so, you know, that is a pretty scary scenario just in general. And so, and it isn't any different on beans. When you look at the bean situation, I take a good look at this week. You know, it was, what, four sessions ago that we were at 1245 on November beans, and today we'd close at 1141 and a half. And so there is definitely justification for taking care of things and sitting down and looking at your own individual situation. And there's opportunity there.
Let's take into account some of the fundamentals of the marketplace. You went through the USDA report. What's left to plant, do you suppose, for corn and soybeans?
Well, when I did all the numbers, there's about 2.1 million acres left on corn. That was 2.3%. Last year, we had 3.3 million acres. Of course, we were planting more corn than we were this year. On beans, we have 11.2 million acres left. And, of course, you know, 7% of the crop is considered to be double crop. And that may get larger because of all of the planting that's going on out in Kansas. But last year, this time, we had 20.58 million acres on beans left to plant. And so there's no doubt that in some of the wettest areas, it's just not going to happen. And if they were planted, we're going to have some losses. But, you know, if you look at the bigger picture, and now you add that as to what the stocks implied from the report, with the higher grain stocks in beans and corn, you know, we could see the bean carry out for this year go from 325 possibly up to 400. I do believe that's partially what's going on in the bean market and has been going on, is that not only did we have much higher acreage numbers, but the implications from a usage standpoint, and knowing that we usually go into the last quarter and we don't use as much, would imply that the USDA could raise it. We've got corn, I think somewhere probably between 1.75 billion bushel carryout. We're at 1.726 right now and a 1.8. And, of course, that's dependent, Todd, on whether or not USDA decides that with this lower price they're going to up the exports. You know, we could go from 1.7 to 1.9, but then you take it down to price and just look at it. Right now, December corn's got resistance at 461 and three quarters. That's a 24% retracement of the move from 514 and three quarters to 435. On a continuous chart, you got 464. So we got some strong overhead resistance in that 460 area. Support-wise, thank the Lord, we're holding that 418 area because that is a support level. $4 psychological support, and then you start dropping all the way down to that 367 level. And then if you look back at a trend line from the old 09 low, you're looking at 352 and three quarters. And, you know, traders will be looking at that.
Well, apparently we have lost Jackie Bakes at this point, but that's all right. We'll catch up with her again during Commodity Week. That'll come to you tomorrow afternoon. On Thursday, we'll record that program. Jackie Bakes and Dan Zwicker and Matt Bennett will be our panelists. I'm going to let those three fight it out. We're going to take some time on that one. And you can hear Commodity Week on Friday afternoon, immediately following the closing market report. Of course, you can get to it on our website at willag.org. By probably 5, 6 o'clock tomorrow evening on Thursday.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Hey, did you know that Minnesota now, as of the first day of July, requires a 10% biodiesel blend? The Minnesota Department of Agriculture, the American Lung Association, and the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council are working together to sponsor a series of traveling workshops in the state to ensure a smooth transition to B10 in Minnesota. Assistant Minnesota Ag Commissioner Charlie Poster describes the details of the change to B10.
As part of a statewide tour, working with the oil industry, petroleum dealers, with our partners, the Minnesota Soybean Growers and the American Lung Association, to have a smooth implementation to B10. In layman terms, that means we're going from having 5% of a gallon of diesel be biodiesel. July 1st of 2014, it's going to go to 10% of a gallon of diesel going to biodiesel. In the winter, starting October 1st, we go back down to 5% for winter operability.
Poster says the increase to B10 is truly a win-win situation for all involved.
I hate to use the cliche win-win, but this is. Governor Dayton was strongly behind this proposal to go to 10% because, first of all, it's good for Minnesota farmers. Having a biodiesel industry in our state adds 73 cents to every bushel of soybeans. It's also good for air quality. For every gallon of biodiesel that we use, it removes a gallon and a half of CO2, helping the Twin Cities region stay in attainment with the Federal Clean Air Act. So this helps farmers' bottom line. It's a clean, renewable energy that we can use more of, and it's good for our air quality. I mean, that's the definition of a win-win.
For more information, check out this website. It's www.mda.state.mn.us. That's mda.state.mn.us. Our thanks to Joe Gill, a member of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, for his help in producing this story. He's out of Albany, Minnesota at KASM. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. Follow us on Twitter at Commodity Week or at David A. Dickey. A couple of ag news stories for the day. According to the Hagstrom Report, Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Gina McCarthy will travel to the Midwest next week to try and clarify what is covered under proposed Waters of the U.S. rule. EPA Acting Assistant Administrator for Water Nancy Stoner says the agency knows it has not had the best relationship with the ag industry in the past, but that doesn't mean EPA can't do better. Stoner says EPA is committed to listening to farmers and ranchers, and the proposed rule takes farmers and ranchers' feedback into account. McCarthy's trip is part of an EPA outreach to try and counter criticism that the rule is extending beyond the agency's authority to bodies of water it has not regulated before. And this little tidbit, the cost for the July 4th picnic for 10 slightly increases this year. The American Farm Bureau Federation has released the results of its informal summer picnic survey. More than 80 Farm Bureau members in 25 states checked retail prices for summer picnic foods at their local grocery stores. And from this, AFBF concludes a picnic including hot dogs, cheeseburgers, pork spare ribs, potato salad, baked beans, lemonade, and chocolate milk for 10 people will cost $58.72. This is a 5% increase compared to last year. And that's a quick look at the ag news for the afternoon. Up next, we'll talk about wheat harvest right here in the soft red winter wheat growing belt of the United States, and how producers might look forward to blowing some of the seed out the back. The soft red winter wheat disease plots at the University of Illinois are always infected with head scab. That's purposeful and gives extension plant pathologist Carl Bradley plenty to study. Unfortunately, the weather was just right this year, and in general, there is also plenty of head scab in the soft red winter wheat crop all around the nation. It is too late to do anything now to deter the disease, but it is possible to manage some of the financial loss. Carl Bradley suggests farmers turn the fan speed up on their combines and blow the infected kernels out the back.
The reason we really want to blow those out and not take those to the elevator is those ones that are very infected will also likely have high levels of a mycotoxin known as deoxynivalenol or DON. Some people also refer to this mycotoxin as vomitoxin. And so if you adjust your combine to really blow out a lot of the very lightweight kernels, that hopefully will reduce the overall level of deoxynivalenol that would be in that load of grain.
However, it is really hard for any farmer to leave grain on the ground, especially when it was so beautiful on the head. Their question is always, aren't I just blowing yield out the back?
The answer is yes, you probably are. However, there was some work out of the Ohio State University a few years ago. They published a paper on it looking at combine adjustments, and they found kind of the best adjustment to make in regards to being the most economical. Although they're losing some yield, you also are getting rid of some of those very scabby kernels that have high levels of the toxin in it. And so if you end up blowing more of those out, you actually have less of a discount at the elevator, so it actually works out.
The Ohio State University recommendation for the fan speed adjustments can be found in an article Carl Bradley posted to the University of Illinois Bulletin website. The recommended adjustments are for fan speed between 1,375 and 1,475 RPMs and shutter opening at 90 millimeters or 3.5 inches. Search Google for the Bulletin and University of Illinois to find the article. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Don't forget that tomorrow during the Closing Market Report, we'll talk with Dan Zwicker, see how he managed to make his way through the USDA reports earlier in the week. I haven't discussed it with him, so I don't know whether he's still a bull or not, but it had to be hard on Diego. We'll find that out tomorrow during the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Dan will also be one of our guests, along with Jackie Vakes and Matt Bennett for Commodity Week, also recorded tomorrow afternoon, posted to the website at willag.org on Thursday, well, probably by about 6 o'clock, so you can pick it up there. It'll air on the programs Friday afternoon, although the markets close tomorrow at noon, so no live markets on WILL or our other radio stations on Friday, although we will have the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week that day. Now on the phone line with us should be the folks at the Andersons Climbers Facility in Logansport, Indiana, to take a look at the cash grain market. Who do I get to talk to today?
Todd, Patrick Kaufman.
Hi, Patrick. How are you?
I'm well.
Farmers not happy probably with USDA from earlier in the week, is my guess.
No. The main focus in our area today has been wheat. We've just started our wheat harvest. Moistures are coming in at 15 to 17% moisture. A lot of vomitoxin down in our Tennessee area, but thus far we have not seen any traces of vomitoxin.
Yeah, so vomitoxin to the south, but nothing as far north as you are. That's good news.
Yes, but we're just starting. I mean, we've just started the first couple days of wheat harvest. So.
And how do yields seem to the producers?
In the well-drained soils, the sandy, we'd call them the lighter soils, the winter wasn't hard on them. 80 bushel yields on a lighter soiled ground, more protected from the wind. So we haven't seen a lot of the heavier soil fields yet because they're just a shade behind.
And how's your basis on wheat as compared to what's been trading in Chicago then?
Delphi is posted at a 15 under the SEP. It feels like we're very competitive. The rail market, the other competitors that we're seeing at 20 to 25 under, but we are posted at 15 under at Delphi.
And probably better check your numbers for the other two commodities.
Cash corn tonight, we're going away at $4.10. And Delphi beans at $13.80.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Patrick Kaufman is with the Andersons Climbers Facility out of Logansport, Indiana. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Back in 2 minutes with the Ag Weather.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
This is Illinois Public Media.
It's National Anise Day. The drink has its best popularity in France, Italy, Portugal, Mexico, and Spain. The sweet liquor is made by crushing 16 different seeds and plants and blending it with a neutral spirit and sugar syrup. On this day in agricultural history in 1869, the ship Novelty landed in Boston, Massachusetts. In its hold was more than 84,000 gallons of molasses shipped on a new principle, not in casks, but in bulk in large tanks. In 1931, Stephen Babcock died. an American agricultural chemist, Babcock is often called the father of the scientific dairy industry. He developed a test to measure the fat content of milk, which helped improve the quality of commercial dairy production. It was the first time a standard for the fair payment of milk was established, and it aided in the production of cheese and butter. And in 1932, Dave Thomas, founder of Wendy's, was born. Perhaps one of Wendy's best advertising campaigns occurred in 1984, when Clara Peller looked into the TV lens and exclaimed, "Where's the beef?" The line was eventually used by Walter Mondale in a debate with Gary Hart in the Democratic primary election. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Today's programming is made possible in part by the Friends of WILL and by Country Financial Representative Scott Jackson, Village at the Crossing in Champaign, committed to helping clients achieve their retirement income goals since 1990. Online at scottjacksonfinancial.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated on the phone line. Drew, take us through the July 4th weekend. The weather today is magnificent. Boy, I'm hoping that's going to be the case by the time we get to Friday. What can you tell me?
Well, I think it's all going to come together very well. This afternoon, even though it looks good right now, we're probably going to see some pop-up showers develop. This is going to be in response to the cooler air that's still pouring into the region from Canada. The odds are really high that we're going to still see a risk of a shower or two, probably from this afternoon into the evening. But as soon as we get to about dusk, the air will dry out again, and that'll be the end of the precipitation for two to three days. There will be a chance for some more showers developing, but only after the surface high pressure system passes over the region. And the surface high is expected to be right on top of us as we go through tomorrow evening and on into the day on Friday. So that is going to be the perfect time. The winds will be light and variable during that period, and we'll likely see a lot of sunshine, a lot of afternoon temperatures around the region in the 70s to around 80 degrees. As we get into Friday afternoon, we'll probably see the winds switching around to the south a little bit, and we'll probably see them increase as we get towards the latter part of the day, but it will only be breezy on the west side of the Mississippi River. Areas to the east will only see light and variable winds still occurring. And we'll expect to see the high pressure system pull on off further to the east as we go Saturday into Sunday. That will likely stimulate an increase in moisture influx from the Gulf of Mexico, and our atmosphere will begin to destabilize once again. A chance for showers will occur as we finish out the holiday weekend. I don't think that the precipitation will be very substantial, but we could pick up on a couple tenths to three quarters of an inch in Illinois in particular. And areas off to the west will also be impacted, but Indiana may get a break a little longer, maybe seeing the next shot of precipitation sometime on Sunday afternoon.
Do you have concerns that we'll build heat, dryness through the month of July?
Not really. I think that the long-term trend right now is for the high-pressure ridge to be over the western United States rather than the east. And so we'll probably see that ridge moving around from mountain region into portions of the plains. And then after that, we'll probably see it break down. So as each one of these little ridges get close to us, we'll see a little increase in temperatures. And then right after that, there'll be some relief with another shot of cooler air coming down from Canada. It should be a very pleasant summer and one that will be good for the crops without any excessive heat.
Growing conditions in the Corn Belt from the northwestern side all the way over into Ohio then should be pretty good. The northwest will dry out but not get too dry, and every place else continues to get rain. I can't imagine a better forecast for a growing season, Drew.
I think that's correct. There may be a little bit of trouble in the southwest corner of the region, in parts of Kansas, Missouri, southwestern Iowa, and parts of Nebraska. Those areas probably dry down, but you know, they've got a ton of moisture right now, so I think that they'll be able to cruise right through at least pollination in the month of July without a hitch.
We'll talk with you again in a week.
All right. Have a good afternoon.
You too, Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. That wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.